Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
And that's the thing. And you'd end up spending more money on the player than you would have had you done a long-term deal today. Because if the franchise tag is $20 million next year, let's just say,
right,
and then it's 125% of that the next year, so now you're paying him $22.5, you could have had him for that much money in a long-term deal and had the security and still had the flexibility to cut him if you wanted.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM and HD1, a radio.com station. Good morning, and if you're just joining us, great to have you with us today. Greg Papa at 8:30, David Lombardi from The Athletic to talk Niners at 9:10, Cam Inman at 9:30. Whew. I mean, every time you have the conversation about the biggest issues addressed that the Niners need to address this season, whether it be the depth at running back, offensive line, pass rush, or the cornerback position, if you zero in on pass rush, it's always going to lead back to Khalil Mack. And a lot of people think that's such a crazy correlation to draw the comparison between the two. But if a team has money and needs a pass rusher, and another team doesn't have money, has a pass rusher but doesn't want to pay him, it's a natural fit. The question is whether or not you end up spending the money on that type of player. I would propose doing a Kirk Cousins type deal. Shorter term, all guaranteed. Are you willing to take that risk, though? I mean, you would guarantee the deal for injury anyway, so you're really just worried about skill. Would Khalil Mack be a solid player for the next 3 years? I think most people would say the answer is yes. But do you want to tie that much money up into Garoppolo and Khalil Mack? And does it pay to play defense? That's another big question. Because I believe Sports Illustrated is doing this piece on Commissioner for the Day. It's either them or The Ringer. And they've had different players step in and be Commissioner for the Day. And Josh Norman, the Redskin quarterback, stepped in, cornerback. And they asked him, you know, what would you change if you were Commissioner? He said, stop paying quarterbacks this much money. He goes, this money is getting out of control. I see what Norman's saying, but it's the most valuable position in all the sports. How do you think teams are going to handle that? They're going to all of a sudden reset the market and pay $15 million? Defensive players are never going to make that much. It almost makes you wonder what's the point of landing a great draft pick if you can't keep him on the roster. That's what's so befuddling to me, is that you drafted him in the top five hoping and praying he would be a star. Then he was a star. And now you're at a position where you don't have the money to pay him. What was it all for then? Are you better off just swinging and missing on these picks?
It's an
now you see why Belichick trades back every year. You see why Belichick is constantly trying to acquire seconds and thirds rather than drafting in the first. Because it's about market efficiency. It's about getting good players, but getting them at a reasonable price so it's not going to cost you an arm and a leg.
I think once you establish yourself as a decent quarterback, I just think that the money, I understand what he's saying because of the fact the quarterback position is portrayed to be this position, and it's the face of the franchise. So they're looking and saying, the owners are like, man, let's just pay this guy. I want to have a guy that can be out in front of the media, that can speak well, to do all these things. So quarterback, I think it's more than just throwing the ball around. I think the quarterback position is more deeper than that. I think that's why the money's there. I think it's more value than just throwing a ball around, because you see a lot of these quarterbacks, look at the Tannehill and Bortles, they're still making big time money. And do they really, are they great quarterbacks, but it's just the way that it's just the way that people value this position, even with mediocre and average guys.
If he plays in week one, and let's assume he stays healthy, does he have an awesome season because he's out to prove something to get that contract, or does he end up having an average to slightly below average season because of the holdout and because of the overall disgruntlement with the fact that he's not getting a new deal?
Khalil Mack, you know him. You've seen the guy play for 4 years. You've seen the kind of effort you're going to get out of him. So without a doubt, Khalil Mack, barring injury, Khalil Mack's going to have a hell of a year.
Of this matters. Either way, if he's on the field, he's going to wreck shop.
He's a boy.
Disagree.
Dog.
I go with the second option. I think you're more likely to be susceptible to injury of the hamstring or the groin status because you haven't been working out with the team, and I don't care what you've been doing on your own, individual drills and all that individual work, that's great. But if you're not pushing yourself against the best of the best in practice, you're not going to be as sharp. And I think you throw in disgruntlement, which would be inevitable if he didn't get a new deal. If he had to go back tail between his legs without a new deal, he's going to be pissed off. There's no doubt about it. So I think that he has a worse year. He has the worst year of his career if he comes back without a new deal.
No way.
No?
He's not that type of guy. I'll bet you right now, I'll prison bet it, do whatever. He gets
that's big bad.
No, it's not. He's going to get double-digit sacks. The guy's he can play football. He's the best pass. He's one of the best pass rushers in the league. Because he doesn't get a deal, ain't going to make this guy not play. But only thing that I'm saying, barring any injuries, if he doesn't get injured, the guy's still going to have a hell of a year.
I'm saying he's more susceptible to injury because of this. So I'm saying you can't say barring injury because that's a big part about my case. I think he's more susceptible to injury because he hasn't been in training camp.
Okay.
So that's where we have a difference on the subject, because I don't think you can say barring injury because I think that's a big part of it. And you'd be a better guy to ask than this. I mean, you went to every camp. I don't believe you ever held out. So you can't speak to what it's like to come play after having held out. I'm just looking at what we've seen from other holdouts. Last year, Donald Penn held out, and Donald Penn got injured. Now, whether or not it was connected to his holdout or not, that's causation versus correlation. The fact is, he held out, he got hurt. So I think Mac's more susceptible to being hurt. And if he misses games, he's less likely to get double-digit sacks.
Yeah, he's younger.
We can set that bet. We can set that bet, and you can have the disclaimer of he has to stay healthy, but you have to come up in number then. You can't just say double digit because the last 3 years, 15, 11, and 10.5. If you get the insurance policy.
He's going to do better than he will. I can make you any type of bet. Bar an injury, give me the insurance policy. If he plays game one, this is not going to be his worst year. He's going to have more than 10 sacks. The 10 sacks has been guaranteed.
Right, but that's not that far out on a limb when he's done that each of the last 3 years.
You said this is time he hasn't missed camp. So he said he's going to have a worse year. I'm saying no. This is a guy who loves football. He works too hard. Khalil Mack's not sitting at home. I understand you do need to get tough, get out there and practice the timing and all those different things. I get that. But Khalil Mack is that type of player, in my opinion, that's going to still have a good year, without a doubt.
So give me a number.
He's going to have at least 11 to 12 sacks. I'm going over to... He missed whole training camp. The whole premise of the conversation was saying, okay, he's going to have a worse year than last year. And I just said, no, he's not. He said this is going to be his worst year that he's had in his 4-year career.
So he'll put up a year. He hasn't missed a single game. He's 16 for 16 every single year. 16 games, 16 starts, 1, 2, 3, and 4. 4 years worth of sack totals, 4 in year 1 as a rookie, 15 in year 2 as a sophomore, 11 in year 3, 10.5 last season. So give me a number you think he gets to this year. You're going to put it right in there, like 11?
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing, though. Even if you got to realize, the first game, he is not going to play the whole game.
Oh, we got a caveat coming in here.
No.
We got a caveat.
It's not a caveat. It's
actually a complete caveat because my whole case is based on the fact that he didn't play in training camp. The holdout makes it so that, of course, he's not going to play in week one, and that all goes to my argument that he's not going to have as good a year. So you can keep throwing all these caveats to water down the bed.
It's not a caveat. Listen what I'm saying.
It's an excuse.
Okay. Do you want to shut up and let me finish?
All right. You take the floor. Take the floor here. The floor is yours.
He's not going to play Harley the first game, and he's still going to. It's not a caveat. I'm saying he's still going to have many sacks.
I didn't say anything. I'm not saying anything.
I'm talking about Dibs. He's still going to have as many sacks, if not more, and he's missing a game. So Mr. Dibley said it's a caveat. It's a cop-out. And that's why I'm disagreeing because
You're saying he'll still get to the number you're claiming, even though he's not going to play a lot in the first game.
That's exactly
what I'm saying. He won't play a lot in the first game because why? He's not in game shape?
Because he's not in game shape, and it behooves the team not to run him out there and have him play 60 to 70 plays.
Because he might get injured.
No, because he's not in shape. He's not in football shape, Dibs.
And
why
isn't he in football shape, Coach?
Is there a way? Holding out. Is there a way we can pick a number and actually get to a bet here, or is this the classic scenario where we yell and scream two sides and then we never actually reach a bet and then we just move on?
Because
you two are the worst. Anne is nodding her head right now. The absolute
worst
at this.
Yeah.
You both scream, and then you never reach an agreement.
Let him lay it out, because I don't understand what I'm saying that's making it so hard. I just told you guys, I laid it out. He said the guy is not going to have his worst year. I told him I disagree. I also said that he's not going to probably play the first game and still going to put up 10 to 11 sacks. What is that caveat? How am I backing? I don't understand. So please explain how I'm coming off as I'm not talking. I don't know what I'm talking
about.
If
you would maybe, I don't know, take a sentence off and let me explain.
Go ahead.
If the injury factor is not a caveat, it's not a fair excuse, because I think that he's more susceptible to injury. So if he gets injured, the bet is still on. You don't get a pass because he gets injured. That said, I'll put it at 11, Joe. 11 over 11 or under 11. I'm happy with that number.
All right, he sets it at 11, but if he's injured, the bet's still in play. If you take the injury out of it, you're probably going to have to come up with your number, right? Because you get that, if you get that insurance policy of he gets hurt and misses four games, bets off, you can't set a number like 10. You're going to have to go higher.
Yeah, I'm a bet that he's not going to get injured. So I'm betting he's not going to injure. So how can he bet that he could get injured? He's going to set it at 10. That's not having a worse year. I get it. But look what he's
saying.
Okay,
good point. Yeah.
It's not even making sense.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to scrap the segment like usual. We're just going to scrap the segment. Yeah. Just, you know what? Just fire the break.
Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Greg Papa coming up in about 12 minutes here at 8:30. I want to tell you a little story. We use the term buttoned up on this program quite a bit, right? We live in a world now where everyone's in such a rush for everything. If you have a good idea, or you think you have a good idea, everyone is in such a rush to implement it, to get it to the market. Sometimes they're just not buttoned up. And you take a good idea and you flush it right down the toilet. You'll see where I'm going here in just a second. But here's the story. 2002, there's a company that's first to market. They had a brilliant idea. The problem with the idea is that they experienced too much success too quickly. 3 million people signed up for this product, for this service, in the first year. And there were no competitors for at least a year. So you were first to market and you had 3 million people on your service in the first year. But you weren't ready for the success. You weren't ready to handle the load of people that was coming into your product, which was an online service. And as a result, your infrastructure was terrible. It was too slow. It was unreliable. And then at the same time, you got so big for your britches, you didn't think any competition was coming, that you went out and you took a bunch of VC money and you put a bunch of these hedge fund experts on your board, and they were more concerned with making money than they were with improving the product. And the next thing you know, Facebook jumped into the space and Friendster became irrelevant. See, people remember MySpace. Tom made $500 million on that thing when he sold it to Fox. It might not have worked, but for him, he got paid and that thing was popular. Facebook took over the world. Friendster was actually first. They hit the market in 2002. They got 3 million signups that opening year. Well before MySpace got in, well before Facebook got in. But they weren't buttoned up. They weren't ready to handle all the traffic that came to their site. It was too slow. It was unreliable. And the second something more efficient showed up, people left. Now, Friendster still exists in Asia as some sort of gaming platform, but it could have been Facebook. Bottom line here is that the NFL is trying to force these new rules down your throat, and they don't have it figured out yet. Case in point. From Chris Mortensen of ESPN. Amid confusion and angst about the new helmet contact rule, the NFL is having daily dialogue about the application in preseason games, league sources told ESPN. The league will also assemble an updated video tutorial that will be distributed to game officials, coaches, and players once the final preseason games are played and in time for teams preparing for their regular season openers, according to sources. How moronic is that? All this confusion over the new rule, and you're going to put together a video, presumably of plays that are happening this preseason, that you're going to get to the officials a handful of days before the opener and expect them, with no practice whatsoever, to be ready to go out there for Philadelphia, Atlanta, week one, Thursday night football, defending champs home at Lincoln Financial Field, and you're going to try to make it anything but a clown car show, because you're going to give them 4 days of practice. This is not buttoned up. If you want to implement these rules, implement them next year. Let the refs study it this season. Give it some time. You're not Friendster. You don't have to worry about Facebook. You're the NFL. Get it right. And yet, for some reason, they're in such a rush to implement these rules that rather than step back and say, you know what? All right, this is a mess. The refs clearly aren't trained on this, which is natural. It's a tough job. let's give them a year to try to train themselves within the game, and then we'll implement it in 1 year's time. And you wonder why people look at Goodell and they make jokes and they look at the NFL and they talk about everything but the games because of decisions like this. I don't know what to make of this right now, but to put together this video right before the start of the season and expect the refs to get this right, you're putting them in a spot to fail. People already hate referees. You're just setting them up for another disaster.
It's an impossible thing, especially when you show them a video of a play that will never happen again. Those two players will never come together in the same fashion that they did on the video. So you can show them examples of this should be called, this shouldn't be called, etc. But when you referee a game in full speed, you're going to have to make that judgment based on that independent action based on player A and player B. And Lowe said it 1,000 times, and he's right. You could call this play or this penalty on virtually every snap, whether it's offensive lineman engaging with a defensive lineman or a running back slightly lowering his head, or what we've seen time and time again where a defender tries to tackle a guy with a ball and he puts his helmet down a little bit and they call it. So it's going to be a mess if they leave the rule as it is going into the regular season.
Without a doubt, they should just wait. They should leave it alone and try it in preseason. The league should come out with a statement and say, after reviewing, because we want to work on this a little bit more, we're going to discontinue this rule right now. We still don't want spearing. We don't advise spearing. We want guys to heads up. We understand what we're looking for. We're going to point guys and let guys know, hey, I could have called you on that. They need to work out the kinks because right now it's too inconsistent. You can never, ever, ever get this one right because you will always have guys, no matter what, by being afraid or just instincts, their head is going to tilt down somewhat. It's going to not use the crown, the spearing, but your head is automatically going to go down. Even when you do use your shoulder, you bring your head and then you slide it to the side. You don't just go shoulder. It's form tackling your head and it slides off to the side. So I think it's going to take a while to start getting this thing right.
Mike Zimmer, the head coach of the Vikings, said point blank when he was talking to the media that this is going to cost people jobs. And I don't think he was talking about officials. I think he was talking about players. You're going to have players that end up getting suspended for things that people realize. It's like this nonsense in college football. If a guy is perceived to have speared an opponent, to have lowered his head for the kill shot, it's an automatic 15, but if they determine, you know, that they got it right, he's ejected. Ejections? What are you talking about, ejection? Sometimes they get this stuff wrong. The kid in the, I think it was the Air Force game against Cal, the bowl game, like 3 years ago. This was the final game of this kid's career. He wasn't going pro. He gets nailed on a bad call early in the game, and then he gets ejected. That's how his college football career ended. That's what you did to this kid, because you got a bad rule in place. MJ in Santa Clara says the new helmet rule smart by the NFL. All right, MJ, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Love your show, by the way. You guys are awesome. Every single morning I listen to you guys. So, guys, I'm actually thinking the NFL is actually doing a brilliant move here. They're washing themselves of any future liability by any single player, right? So this is what's going to happen this year. Everybody's going to go up in the uproar, just like we are doing now. The fans, the media, but most importantly, the players. The players are going to go back to the NFL and say, get rid of this rule. It doesn't make sense. It's going to cost us jobs. So we have the coaches talking about it. So the NFL is going to say, beautiful. We did our job. In front of a judge, I can say that we try to make the NFL as fluffy as we could do, We tried to protect the NFL players, and the NFL players came back and told us we want it back to being violent, to being concussion prone. So the NFL, after this 1 year, so what? They suffer, people are in the uproar. At the end of the year, they're the good guys trying to protect the players. The players themselves are going to go back, and the coaches and the fans saying, I want it dangerous. So there goes liability for the NFL. Brilliant move, guys. Thanks so much.
Smart point. It's a smart point. The NFL is trying to get ahead of the lawsuits here, and they're trying to prevent themselves against current lawsuits. They want to say that they're doing everything in their possible power to go out there and make the game safer for the players. The problem is it's a dangerous sport. It's inherently dangerous as is. And what you're doing is cutting off your nose to spite your face. Okay, great. Maybe down the road you won't have the player lawsuit coming. But you're turning off fans at every turn. Everywhere. How many fans want to talk about this nonsense on a regular basis? How many fans want to watch that Philadelphia-Atlanta game, the first NFL game of the year? You don't have to be a fan of either team. Everybody tunes in for that game. It's always the defending champ against a quality opponent. first quarter, you get one of these calls, everyone's going to be on Twitter complaining. Everyone's going to be on social complaining. You're going to be at the bar complaining. You don't want to focus on that stuff.
No, you watch the games to get away from, and I think you made the point yesterday or late last week or whatever. You watch sports as an escape to get away from all the things that hound us, whether it's getting barked at by your boss or getting a parking ticket. So you put on a football game, and now it's all these flags, and you see nothing but the zebras huddling. We're already hounded by all the instant replay that slows these games down, and now we don't even know what a tackle is anymore. We already have enough trouble wondering whether or not a catch is a catch or a touchdown's a touchdown. You got to wait for the review before you can actually celebrate. Now you watch a play, and a standard play, you got to wait and hold your breath to see if, ooh, that was a big hit. Is there going to be a flag coming? It takes away a lot of the fun of just the pure joy of watching 11 on 11. And even though you know it's violent and guys get hurt, nobody wants to see that. There's that certain element of, wow, the danger and the hits these guys take. Lowe played 16 years. I can't imagine playing 16 seconds, let alone 16 years at the amount of violence that goes on in that game. That's part of the attraction.
I think this one will forever change the game of football as we know it. You already starting to kick off now. You got to get guys can't get the running start. You're changing the game of football as we know it. You look at boxing, you don't see them trying to protect guys. You look at the UFC, you don't see them trying to change the gloves. And they love violence. And because there's a union and because there's certain things and there's repercussions and they're trying to change things in order to save themselves, but they're destroying the fabrics of something that's been the integrity of something that's been going on for so long. Certain things I can live with. The catch rule, okay, it's one instant. It, you know, going across the middle, hitting a defensive player, okay, we get it. On certain plays, the guy runs a four route, the dig route across the middle, you're going to get, you know, hitting a defensive, I get that. Those are things, he doesn't have the ball, he's going up, he's defensive. Darryl Sting, I get that. But when you're now, you're trying to say, look, I understand, keep your head up, don't lead with the crown, the top of your head, I get that part of it. So that's good. Trying to clean that up, that's great. But when you now you're throwing flags on what they're trying to do to change it, I think you are changing the face of football. You're changing something that I think is going to hurt football and hurt it in a way that they can beyond repair if they stay with this rule. This is the basic fabrics of football that you're dealing with now. It's not the catch rule. It's not the holding rule. It's not the 5 yards and let receivers go. This is football in its entity, is the hitting, the hard hitting. And for you to try to minimize that, I think you're doing football a huge disservice.
What the NFL thinks is going to hurt its product is people like Ryan Shazier laying motionless on the turf during a primetime game. And that's what this is in direct response to. That's why they're trying to change this rule. Last year, they had a marketable player on one of the most recognizable teams in their business hit the turf and was unable to move. Now, unbelievably, Shazier is walking again. But that doesn't change the fact that a lot of mothers ended up seeing that highlight and started thinking to themselves, well, if you're going to be paralyzed on the turf, I don't want my kids playing your sport, which leads into this story from Eric Sonheimer of the LA Times. 10,000 fewer students are playing football in California since 2015. This is an interesting story because it goes to schools like West Hills Chaminade, a religious school, El Camino Real High in Woodland Hills, charter school, Westlake Village Oaks Christian, another religious school, and Birmingham High, another charter school. And it lays out how all these kids are now coming out for soccer instead of football. You're right. There are going to be a lot of schools in a lot of areas around the country where football participation is going to drop off. I believe we're seeing that in Marin as well. Where it's never going to happen is in Miami Gardens, in Odessa Permian, Texas, Midland, Texas, in the Philadelphia Catholic League, and the state of Ohio. And
I was going to say, yeah, Massillon, Ohio. We can pick a number of communities.
You are never going to have an issue finding people who want to play football. Your overall participation numbers may dwindle. But again, what hurts soccer is what's going to end up helping football. In a country of how many hundreds of millions, we're going to have plenty of dudes who have football as their only way out. And you will forever be able to fill that player pool. It might shrink a little. The problem that's hurting soccer is that they have an infinite number of people out there and they can't seem to get the good ones to come play their sport. And this just leads into that conversation again where soccer's coming. Soccer's coming. I had this conversation this week and I realized something. Soccer's never coming. Soccer's never coming in this country. Soccer is never going to be top three. Soccer's never going to be popular. I've been hearing this since the damn 90s when we hosted the World Cup. And you know where we are now? The men's Olympic team, or excuse me, the men's U.S. soccer team didn't even qualify for the World Cup. The men's under 23 team didn't qualify for the 2012 or 2016 Olympics. And the women's team that everyone rallies behind finished fifth at the Rio Olympics in 2016. It's not getting any better. Soccer is never going to be popular in this country.
And honestly, Joe, I think sometimes the stats, with all due respect, I think stats right now is they're viewed, and I think they can be taken any way you want. And I think that I don't know if necessarily football, all sports are down. Why? Because our kids have gotten soft. Our kids now, you're going to have your son. It's going to get to an age, and you're going to say, get outside and go play. A lot of them want to stay in the house and play video games. Our culture has changed. Do you know they say kids now, they spend between 5 to 6 hours a day on their phones, tweeting, playing games. 5 to 6 hours. We're no longer outside playing. So everyone's putting this football, all sports, all activities outdoors for kids and stuff is on a decline because phones and because of different things that they can do with their time.
Instead of sports like football worrying about soccer creeping up, sports like soccer should be worried about e-gaming creeping up.
Exactly.
Because in a few years, e-gaming is going to be more popular than soccer is. All right, the Greg Popper Report is brought to you by Gelati Construction Company, celebrating over 100 years of teamwork, solutions, and excellence. Greg Papa joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Pop, good morning. We'll bring you right into the conversation. The new helmet rule, the new quarterback protection rules that are in place. Chris Mortensen has the report that the NFL is going to try to improve upon this by the start of the season. How bad could this get for the league? Because right now it seems as if a lot of people are unhappy with the way the game's being officiated.
Yeah, I really believe, Joe, just talking to a lot of people in the league and reading everything, that this is a crackdown they're trying to enforce in August. And I think come September, they're going to adjust. And they're going to call it like they did before, probably a little more strict on some areas. But I think they've been the walking mandate for the game officials in the preseason is just to flag anything. And let's not worry about it. Let's rein them in and then pull back when the season starts. Mike Pereira has been saying that. We had Matt Millen on the show yesterday, and he thinks that's exactly what's going to happen. I can recall baseball years ago with a balk rule where they really took it excessively into the season for a couple of months, then they just dropped it. I think whether they want to change the language of it and be more specific with the crown of the helmet, the very top of the helmet, and not get down to the forehead and around the face mask area, we'll see. It's going to be the game officials are going to have to. They have a tough job, and they're going to have to legislate this during the game, and it's going to be difficult. And then I think we're going to have. Honestly, I think the outcry is going to be where players lower their helmets, and they're not flagged in the regular season based on what we saw in the preseason. And so I think they're going to adjust. I think it's just a very popular talking point now in August because we're seeing a lot of flags on plays we're not sure of. But these games don't matter. They're doing it to make a point. And I think when the season starts, it's not going to be as big a story as we think it is right now.
So you think it's more of just a PR campaign by the NFL and that ultimately the game won't be like resembling what we had last year?
No, I don't think it's a PR campaign. I think they understand the CTE data, the brain trauma, and what it's doing to their players in the short term and the long term. And a lot of, Chris Borland of the 49ers, remember him? He just retired from the NFL after, his first year? Very promising young linebacker. So a lot of players are just choosing not to play anymore. They've got to get a handle on it. But I think it was purposely done where there was going to be an overreaction on the implementing of the rule in the preseason. And they've done this in past years. And then when the actual games start, it's going to be different. You may give a guy a little bit of a gray area warning here. But again, then, because we analyze everything backwards and forwards, what happens when an offensive player or defensive player gets away with a violent play that we saw in the preseason that was flagged and it's not flagged in the regular season? Then there's going to be an outcry for that. So you can write down whatever you want to write down in the rule book. Then these officials have to go out and the spirit of the rule call the game. And I think they're going to rein it in a little bit. And I think the coaches, you heard Kyle Shanahan's comments, you heard the players, you heard Richard Sherman going off on it on Twitter. And Richard Sherman's a, you know, he's a power player with the Players Association. So I'm sure there's a behind the scenes working with the owners, the coaches, the players union to try to understand this rule. But I think it's a popular talking point here in August. I don't think it's going to be that severe. There'll be a couple of plays here and there that impact winning and losing, but not to the degree I think we're anticipating now.
Pop, when you look at Aaron Donald, he's with the Rams. He's, you know, not necessarily practicing, but he showed up. What's the biggest thing that separates his situation from a Khalil Mack situation? And when do you think Khalil Mack does show up?
I'm not sure. I mean, you'd have to ask the agents and, you know, Todd France for Aaron Donald and Joel Siegel for Khalil. They're two different players. I think they have a lot of similarities. I think, you know, Aaron Donald can play on the outside and be uncovered and be a very effective player. And I think Khalil could move inside and rush in the A and B gaps. But they're, I mean, in theory, you know, one's a defensive end, one's a defensive tackle. So there's a little bit of a financial difference there and as far as the impact on the game. But I think these two players really kind of blur that. I don't know. Again, I don't know. I think Donald's will get done sooner just based on everything you're reading, that there's, you know, very close to getting it done with Les Snead and Stan Kroenke and Kevin Demoff and his people. And I don't believe the Raiders are not talking to Khalil Mack. I'm not sure what the date is. Again, I said yesterday on my show that I think Labor Day Monday is when you really got to hope Khalil Mack is going to start to make his way to 1220 Harbor Bay Parkway and get ready to play the next Monday. I mean, he could literally show up a week later on the day of the game and go play. I saw O.J. Simpson, you know, after he had his 2000 season in 73, he signed the day of the game, played the Raiders, and beat the Raiders to by a point on Monday Night Football. He played that night. So it happens. If you're asking for where this is going to be, I've said all along, I don't think he misses any league games. There was a report from CBS Sports yesterday that they would be shocked if he shows up on time. But where are they getting that from? Is that coming from Joel Siegel? Is it coming from the Raiders? I think the one thing is there's not a lot of quotes, inflammatory quotes from either side. We've not heard a word from Joel Siegel. Reggie won't talk. They're not going to let Tom Delaney talk, who's really doing the contract. Khalil's not talking. So I think that's good. You're not burning any bridges down. I think this is just a hardcore NFL big money negotiation that is typical in August. And, you know, Jerry McDonald had a note the other day that I hadn't thought about, but it's pretty obvious, really, that if the Raiders give Khalil more than Von Miller, whether it's 20, 21, 22 per, whatever it is, and how many guarantees, the Raiders are going to be the first team in the history of the league. They won't be the last, but they'll be the first to have two $20 million a year players on the roster simultaneously. And really, maybe the only two positions that could happen would be quarterback and defensive end outside linebacker. So it's, you know, when you start adding it up, you know, if you're giving Derek 25 and Khalil 22, that's $47 million of 177.2 this year. That would be next year's calibration on the cap. But it's a lot of money tied up in two players.
Greg Papa joining us here on 95.7 The Game. We had this conversation this morning regarding the Niners, the running back position, the offensive line, the pass rush, or the secondary. What do you think the biggest concern is heading into week one at Minnesota?
Well, Jarek, as far as week one, you know, you're concerned about McKinnon. You have to hope he's going to make it along with Breida. After that, Alfred Morris has got to show you something because Joe Williams just looks like he's a waivable player. But right now he's got a fractured rib. You got to be healthy before you can cut him. I don't know how that impacted the rib injury. I heard it was third quarter. I watched the game back again yesterday morning, and he just was running tentative the entire game. Just not the same guy I saw last year in August, and they wound up shutting him down on IR. The offensive line's going to be fine. They're not getting anything going in the outside stretch zone. And this game coming up against the Colts on the weekend, they got to get something going with that stretch run. I don't care what back is running it. You could have Garoppolo keep it. You've got to get some more. They got to figure out how to the landmarks and how to block the outside zone. But I think as time goes on, they got to generate a pass rush. And Cassius March and Jeremy Atachu have not really flashed. Atachu had a really powerful inside move late in the game on Saturday in Houston. A back picked him up. I've seen Atachu. I thought he was more edgy. shoulder dip when he was a Charger low. You may know, remember more than I. I thought he showed flashes. It looks like he's trying to bull rush everybody here. So yeah. I don't know if he's got enough power to get that done. I thought he could kind of bend and go around the edge a little more. Cassius Marsh is a try-hard guy. They're not, you know, great skill. The name Elvis Dumervil, I've always had in the back of my mind. Where is he? He actually led the team last year in sacks, but what do they have, six and a half, something like that?
Yes.
You've got to heat up the quarterback. Your back end is what it is. I think, you know, Robert Saleh's going to have to do more blitzing like he did with Brock Coyle right through the middle of the front the other night, and you can pop that. I think Reuben Foster could be a good blitzer as well. But to answer your question in my typical long-winded response, I would say that everything else is solvable unless you have severe injury. But right now, I don't see a lot of great pass rushers on this team.
Do you think that the secondary pop is intact enough to where it's going to be solvable? And take Richard Sherman out of it, although I think he's quite a question mark coming back from the Achilles. But the young players they have back there, do you have enough faith in them that that's going to be a solid enough unit?
I don't know. I mean, I did not like Adrian Colbert missing that tackle. That was bad. I mean, it's you know, it's you're learning how to tackle again. It's preseason. But that the whole point of this defense is nothing gets over the top. You keep everything in front of you, so you can't miss tackles in the hole like that. That should have been, you know, an 8-yard gain. It wound up popping for a big chunk. So you just don't know enough about these guys. Tart, Colbert. I like Witherspoon's shoulder when he broke up that pass for the shoulder. That was a textbook play. I think he looks the part. But no, Dibs, this secondary's not proven anything yet. They're very young. And then you got an older player, Richard Sherman, coming back off a bad injury, an Achilles on that right leg, which is his plant leg, playing that side corner. So I haven't seen him do anything yet. In the little bit of video, I'm not going to get weirded out about the Goodwin play, but he was limping and he had no makeup speed at all. So I haven't really seen him do anything. So no, the secondary is young. And, the one guy that's got some veteran wisdom back there, I'm not sure he's completely healthy yet, and I'm sure they're not.
Bobby, you like looking at guys' feet, and you talk about offensive line and running back. You know, it's usually the running back is slow to the hole, fast through the hole, press the hole. When you look at the offensive line, look like for San Francisco 49ers, look like they pass blocking pretty well. But sometimes you see them get pushed back, and now the running back has to run the hump, so he can't necessarily get in the hole. Far as up front, are you seeing any push? And how do you think is the blocking scheme? What do you think could be some of the solution, especially when you don't have your guard, a starting guard seems like right now that's just a clear dominant guard. So just the push up front.
Yeah. How many years did you play in an outside zone scheme, Lo?
Like,
because they're different.
Yeah, they're totally different.
Yeah, And it's complicated. I don't think they ever got it really last year. I think that Carlos Hyde was not a good outside zone stretch runner. Just didn't have a feel for whether to keep it play side or cut back side. Right. By the way, he's playing great in Cleveland in the preseason, and he's tough to tackle, but he didn't fit the scheme. So this outside zone scheme, you got to rep it. You've had some injuries, obviously, on the right side of the line. Jonathan Cooper just does not look healthy. Right. He's not. He's limping. I mean, it's obvious. You could see his physicality and his strength, but he's got to get healthy here. I think this Magnussen injury, and he's not the kind of guy you put on short-term IR and bring him back. You just let him go. So if you have to IR him, then I think that Cooper and Garnett both make the team, and one starts and one's a backup and Person's your swing guy. But it's just a different kind of blocking scheme. Where and if you're not all tight and you talk about landmarks and hitting spots, they got the right personnel to do it, but you got to rep it. That's why the big thing I want to see in Indy this weekend is them just get the stretch run play over and over and over again and really get it down, because all of your movement off of that, all of your complementary pass action with the boots and the waggles, it's all off of that. Now, in Al Davis hated this running scheme. Because it's easy to penetrate. When you got offensive linemen
sure.
moving to the side and not going right into a body, you can just shoot a gap and blow it up. So at times you're just seeing a lot of stuffs, a lot of offensive linemen getting pushed back, and the running back has nowhere to go. But it does work. And I'd venture to guess more than half of the teams in the league run this kind of scheme as their base, because it makes the defense overflow and they get out of their gaps and it's harder to play. So you're helping the lineman by blocking half a body, and then you got the cutback on the backside and all that, the reach block on the front side. So it's just, you know, it works. It's just, I don't know what's going on. I think it's a product of the way they train in August football. They're not getting it. And you think you're going to get it opening day against the Minnesota Vikings with Kendricks and Barr and Hunter? And they got some monsters on that front. The big bad kid from New York, Richardson, the son of Anarchy. I mean, if you're running that outside zone against that front with all their double A gap blitzes, you may have minus yards rushing. So you got to figure this out between now and September the 9th.
Catch him noon to 3 p.m. He and Bonte Hill will be joined by Carmen Policy today at 2 o'clock. Greg Papa joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Pop, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Carmen the Charmer, the consigliere. It'll be fun. Have a good day, guys.
See you, Pop.
Bye.
The rare O.J. Simpson reference from Pop. Not for the show. I mean, we talk about O.J. every day.
No, but the rare O.J. as a football player reference for this program.
Forgot he played football.
Shout out Galileo High School here in San Francisco where he played as a prep. But, yeah, that 2004-yard or 2006-yard year. I remember that, sadly.
All right. So we got the new helmet rule. Yep. We got the officials, Mike Zimmer, all this stuff going on. It led into a conversation right before Pappas. So jump back in. 10 years from now, what's more popular in this country? Soccer or e-gaming? E-sports. Sorry, I'm supposed to call it e-sports. I know very little about it, except I have data in front of me regarding its viewership. I'm just curious, 10 years from now as a country, where are we headed? Will soccer be more popular or will e-sports be more popular?
Are we using the metrics as TV ratings solely? Or are we also using like attendance at games, numbers of franchise? I think...
Let's say this. You put your product out there. How e-sports. Many people view it? Just how many people are watching your product? Like, do more people watch this or that? What are more people interested in? I know there's no definite metric that can show us that, but we have numbers for TV ratings and we have streaming numbers. Just what's more popular?
I think soccer will be more popular. I think e-gaming or e-sports between now and then will make greater increases, but soccer already in this country is more popular than e-gaming, e-sports right now, and I think it still will be in 10 years.
I'd like to say it's soccer just because I'd prefer it to be soccer, but sadly, I think it's going to be esports. I'm not saying it badly for the people in esports. I just think that all the money and everything is going towards that area, so I have a feeling it's going to be esports.
I think it's esports because you got to go talk to the kids. You can't ask us. Go talk to the 18 and 19-year-old kids that are playing it. That, you know, I got a son that's in college and freaking pretty good, and I'm like, dude, when you got done working out, first thing he's doing is going online and playing, you know, the different games with his buddies and stuff. And it's like, it's a huge epidemic. And, you know, and this kid does well in school. When you hear stats that's coming out, the kids are spending between 3 to 6 hours a day on their computer or whether it's on their phone playing all these different games. That tells you where we're trending. And so when you look at certain things like that, when you have the Warriors and you have individuals that are buying these esports games and these teams and organizations, it's not just it's people buying them because it's coming. It's we sat the guy on Dibs when he came on the show and talked about, hey, I'm buying one, and teams are doing it. So I really believe you have average people that doesn't take any skill set. It takes skill set to play soccer, and soccer is pretty tiring. You're running around, you're playing soccer, chasing the ball, football, it's tough, it's physical, all those things take a lot. But when you're playing esports or certain things, everyone can do it, and it's a great way to make a living. Guys, Will Smith's son, his oldest son, he's a gamer he makes his money doing that. There's a lot of kids out there and a lot of adults that are doing this, that are in this profession.
I do have a question, though. Would you say more globally, or are you talking more the United States? Because the United States, I think, is going more esports, but I know globally soccer.
Let's do both. Okay. I mean, right now, globally, esports has over 300 million fans. Over 300 million fans for esports. In 2016, the League of Legends World Championship Finals drew 43 million viewers.
Wow.
Soccer has no chance against this. Soccer came here. The World Cup, the biggest event in soccer, came here in 1994. And since then, 24 years later, the sport has experienced virtually no growth.
That's not true.
Where is it popular? It's not more popular than the NBA.
Franchises.
Not more popular than Major League Baseball. Not more popular than the NFL. It's made no growth.
That's not true. Because if you look at the number of professional franchises that are now in America, it's grown exponentially. If you look at the television ratings from 94 for not only the Major League Soccer products, but also for the EPL. Those have grown as well. Soccer participation since 1994 has grown as well. Now, does it rival the top three leagues? No. But to say they've experienced no growth is just inaccurate.
Okay, fine. It hasn't experienced no growth. We can get really technical, and we'll make sure we're very nuanced with our conversation. How big has it gotten since the World Cup came here? Again, you're not popular than any of the other major sports in the country. How have you gotten in terms of your product, your MLS, versus other leagues around the world? You're still garbage. Wayne Rooney comes over here at the end of his career. All these dudes come here for the payday at the end of the career. These guys are the Oakland Raiders of the 2000, of the aughts, where everyone would come here to cash in at the end, right? That's what the Raiders were. Everyone's final payday was in Oakland. That's what MLS is it not?
In part, they do get some aging stars to come over, yes.
And who's the best American soccer player right now?
That would be Christian Pulisic.
Where does he play?
He plays in the Bundesliga in Germany.
Is that that's not America. Why wouldn't he play here if it mattered? I mean, 24 years since the World Cup. Our best players don't play here?
Yeah, they don't play here, our best players in general. But that, I think, doesn't speak to a sport experiencing no growth.
You're right. I was wrong. It has experienced growth. Has experienced significant growth. Has it reached 300 million worldwide in a handful of years? 43 million viewers to esports in 2016? That's growth. Where did this come from? When did esports start? Has it been even in business for 10 years?
I have no idea.
Yes, it has.
10 years. And it wasn't around in 94, though, was it?
Probably not, because there weren't a lot of e-games. People didn't play a lot of games online because the online capability wasn't at that same level. You're putting out an audience of worldwide numbers for e-sports versus Major League Soccer and soccer in America, so I don't think that that's a fair comparison.
Again, I agree. Completely right. But what I need is evidence that soccer is really growing in this country. The biggest soccer event in the world came here 24 years ago. Where are we at? Our product is no better than it was back then.
That's wrong. Our product is much better than it was.
Were we in that World Cup?
Yes.
Were we in this most recent World Cup?
I don't think that that is the
ultimate... No, just the answer if we're going to be technical.
Oh, sure. No, we didn't make this World Cup.
Wow,
no,
24
we
years later, we were in that World Cup. We're not in this World Cup. How did our women's team do at the last Olympics?
Again, this is an apples and oranges
fifth
conversation.
Would be the answer. How did the under-23 team do? The young team? The team that was born right when the World Cup came here? How did they do in the last two Olympics? The answer? They didn't qualify.
Yeah.
They didn't qualify. We're no better than we were back then. And our best players still go overseas. So why? What is this product, this MLS product? Sure, we have teams out there. We're able to gouge the public for their money, but it's not growing like esports. This is going to blow right past soccer. For years, everyone's been saying soccer is going to come around. It's nowhere. Where is it?
It's everywhere, with expansion into every single major market in this country and a minor league system that is now getting to be in greater place, and more players playing at the youth level, more money coming into U.S. soccer. And whether or not the U.S. men's national team did what they should have done, you can look back to 4 years ago where they had a great result at the World Cup. Instead of looking at this result, which was obviously a major disappointment for a number of different reasons, they have organizational issues at the top of U.S. soccer.
Coach, we couldn't beat Trinidad and Tobago.
At the top of universe.
We have over 300 million people. We couldn't beat Trinidad and Tobago, a third world island country.
That's a fact, yeah. And I'm telling you, it's a disappointment that they didn't make the World Cup, but that is not the only metric to measure whether or not soccer is growing in this country.
I know, but I mean, it's again, like, convince me that this is a thing. Convince me that 20 years from now, this is going to matter. You had the biggest advertisement for soccer you could possibly ask for in 94. And where are you at? Okay, let's talk about this. We offend A's fans all the time with this conversation. There's a soccer team here, Dibs?
Yeah.
When was the last time we mentioned them?
We don't talk about soccer. We don't even talk about hockey.
Exactly.
I mean, that's not a fair barometer either.
Do you want to be hockey?
You'd rather be soccer than hockey. Absolutely.
But neither get mentions on local sports talk. You're right down the street. You don't get mentioned. And you don't get mentioned because people are trying to offend you. You don't get mentioned because you don't move the meter.
Well, they don't get mentioned on their own flagship, as we throw the flagship out there, the F word, as we all talk flagship and the various responsibilities. The Quakes flagship doesn't even have local programming. So to your point, they don't get a lot of buzz and talk. But that doesn't mean that soccer's not growing in this country. Now, I think it's an interesting question you throw out there about 10 years from now, because you can't deny the unmitigated growth of esports. My kids, to what you're saying, Lo, spend a ton of time on their devices, on their video game consoles,
mine too,
on their computers.
I have to stop them. It's crazy. And so I believe this esports deal is I think it's going basketball, football. I think it's going to be up there because the growth potential for people to make money, average people, it takes a skill to play football. It takes a skill to play those games. But if you can put this kind of 6 hours, between 4 to 6 hours a day that kids are on their devices, everyone has a chance. It's not jumping. It's not how high you can jump. It's not how far you can kick a ball. So I think it's a huge difference, and I think it's going
to
grow.
211 Fremont, welcome to the program. What's going on?
What's up, fellas? Hey, Joe, I think you're wrong. And check this out. I think that as far as quality of play, we are better, and the game has grown. But for us to actually show that we're better, it's going to be hard because the competition around the world is already so far in advance better than us, and they're constantly getting better as well, as we are too, but it just doesn't show it. And as far as the esports, of course it's going to be a wider range of people and a lot more people because, first of all, shy kids can play it, out-of-shape people can play it, older people can play it. There's much more of a geographic as far as people can actually access it.
Kind of like the population of America versus the population of Trinidad and Tobago, right?
I mean, soccer in other countries.
Well, no. What do you mean soccer in other countries? You just said that esports can grow faster and be bigger than soccer because more people can play it. Well, we have over 300 million people here. Trinidad and Tobago, they have very few. They have a fraction of that. So wouldn't you, by your own logic, 211, wouldn't by your logic mean that we should be able to beat them in soccer?
Well, soccer, see, those countries, I'm going to keep it real. I'm Hispanic, and I have a lot of connections to these countries. That's all they have. Some of these countries, all they have is soccer as well, though. That's all they have, and that's all they live for, and that's all they have, bro. And they don't even play soccer with the ball sometimes. So, okay. Of course, they're going to be better, even the newer countries than us.
Appreciate the phone call. We're up against it. I need the case. I mean, I get it that soccer is growing, but you're not passing football, you're not passing the NBA, you're not passing Major League Baseball. Fine, we get that. E-gaming is going to come right past you if they haven't already. We got people on the line that work for esports companies and people who want to call me an idiot.
Please.
We'll come to all of you next. Joe Lo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.